Hello, I'm Hal Lublin.
And I'm Mark Gagliardi.
Since the dawn of humanity, one issue has gone unsettled. With the fate of the world in the balance, we're here to settle once and for all. Best LA Movie.
That's right. Don't worry, everyone. We got this.
Podcasts should have a theme song.
Podcasts should not have a theme song.
Yes, they should.
No, they shouldn't.
They sound good.
Yeah, but people are just going to skip past it.
You know what?
You're right. We got this.
Let's start.
All right.
Go ahead, Mark.
I love LA.
I knew you were going to do that. I knew
Come
you were
going
to do it.
Why didn't you do the we love it?
I don't know.
Because you don't yes and anymore?
Sorry. Okay. I just have no energy left.
I love LA.
We love it.
That's perfect. I didn't even hit
the timing of it.
That was dead on. What is up, people of the world? We're here today to talk about the city we love, Los Angeles, because we got a tweet last week that said, man, you guys talk about LA too much. People listen from all over. So we thought,
is that true?
Let's do our Los Angeles episode.
By the way, this was suggested by a guy named Tommy Bobo, who sounds like one of the minor gangsters in Goodfellas. Like when he's going through the restaurant, yeah. Tommy Bobo on the side. Yeah, exactly. So we're here for Tommy Bobo.
So thank you, Tommy. And we have with us a special guest, a friend of ours who lives right here in beautiful Los Angeles. You probably know him from a million things, including the reboot of MST3K. He's a hilarious dude. Jonah Ray, what is up?
We love it.
Perfect.
So you picked this out of the whole list of topics that we sent you. What drew you to this?
I love this city. I desperately want to leave, but I love this city.
Fair.
And I love, like, you know, that was the coolest thing I think about when I moved here in 2001 was just being like, that's this thing. And then, you know, a good pal of mine, Dave Lyons, he's a locations manager. So it's like, he's a guy that knows, like, there's a building near my house in Highland Park that is like a building that's used in a Charlie Chaplin movie. There's, you know, the staircase for the Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah.
Stairs. There's
the music box stairs in Echo Park.
Yeah. And I'm like, it's like in downtown, my friend Paul Bonanno lives right next to where the like dead end was for the You Need a Medical Supply and the graveyard entrance and Return of Living Dead. Like, it's like, I was like,
wow.
And like blown away by that, how it's, and that's why I love that doc, Los Angeles Plays Itself.
Oh, I've not seen this.
No, me neither, but it sounds great.
Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic. It's very, very heady, a lot like the, film Odyssey, the story of film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Here he is with the guy that is the bubble of Hollywood. Film. He loves film, but he hates Hollywood.
Come on, man.
Yeah. That's
where they make them.
No, but he talks about like, it's like the story of film is not how you think. It's not a Western point of it's like the first, cut sequence in a film, in a short. It was in Germany. And like, it's like, and this one is a Dutch man did this one. All the while people think in Hollywood, and he just keeps always refers to it as bull.
This accent is very Werner Herzog.
I was going to say, it sounds like it was narrated by Hans Landa from Inglourious Basterds.
I can't tell. And it's funny, if you look at the reviews, I think it's available on Hulu now, but if you look at the reviews of this thing, people say, if you're not into this guy's voice, you're not going to be into this thing.
Yeah.
You know, moving images of motion pictures, and like how he just shows you film history in a global sense, as opposed to, you know, Edison came up with this thing, and then there was the train, and then all Chaplin, and then
yeah.
Brad Pitt.
Meanwhile, the Lumiere brothers and Georges Méliès. Excusez-moi.
Yeah.
You know what? Today we are going to talk specifically not about global cinema. We are narrowing it down. We are focusing on what is the greatest Los Angeles movie of all time. Now, let me ask you guys this. What do you think is the difference when New York is used as a character in a movie versus when Los Angeles is used as a character in a movie? How are those two characters different?
Hmm. Well, I'd say like, you know, New York is, it's about, it seems to be always about the people and the crowds, mm-hmm. where, LA is more about the geography. I'd say is like, yeah. the difference, you know, and all the stuff that entails, where it's like, you know, showing when you show, it's like, say, hey, time to do that edit sequence, where we're coming into New York and you see buildings, bridges, people, I'm walking here. Mm-hmm. And then like LA, it's just like beaches. Sunshine,
yeah,
you know, the hills, you know, stuff like that, and then, you know, maybe an intersection, a freeway intersection,
right?
Yeah,
the iconic people of New York and the iconic locations of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem like, and also it seems to me like New York frequently represents grit or high class, and LA is either grime or glitz.
Well, LA, you can pick and choose. That's, I mean, yeah. yeah. Blaine Kapach that said about LA, it's that it's five of the best towns and seven of the worst.
Yeah, I get that.
Choose, you know, you can be anywhere in this town, and it could be a completely different place.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about some completely different places. The way we figured we'd like to do this is to, we'll go around, we'll each in turn. I figure nine is a great way to start. And if we each drop in one, three rounds, we'll have nine. Well, I think we'll have a pretty solid collection of LA movies. Now, people, I'm sure on the internet will say, you forgot about this one. You forgot about this one. Yes, frequently we get the silver and bronze medalist strong, but I'm pretty sure we're going to pick the greatest Los Angeles as a city movie.
And I think this is going to be a thing that we're going to find out as we go through it too, is that are we going to be representing Los Angeles as a city, as a, you know, municipality, or are we going to represent it through show business, which is a very small part of this?
Right. I was wondering about that. I'm glad you brought it up because I'm sure there will be a couple on here. I know I've got some I'd like to put on. Do we think that movies about Hollywood count as movies about Los Angeles?
Well, I mean, something like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which I forgot to put on this list and is not one of my three,
right.
It's tied directly into the history of Los Angeles and the death of the trolleys and the birth of the freeways, but it also is all about show business. There are very few LA-based films that I can think of off the top of my head that don't at least acknowledge how big of a role show business plays here.
Right.
Because it sort of covers this. It's the reason why a lot of people move out here. It is the upper echelon of earnings, but also there is some sort of a working class that exists in there. So it's woven into the fabric of the city, but is not what the entire city is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No, totally.
All right. So we'll bear that in mind as we go.
Sure.
Some of these might be, you know, and we might get specific to some movies just take place in a neighborhood. Like Paul Thomas Anderson's movies pretty much happen in the Valley. And they never talk about Hollywood. They never go into Hollywood. It's all just what's happening in the Valley.
Yeah.
But let's get started. Jonah, as our guest, would you like to go first and drop the first movie?
Sure. I'm going to go with, for my first movie, I think I'm going to go with Repo Man.
Oh. Amazing.
One of my all-time favorite movies, Al Cox. And it's just a fantastic film, but it also very much feels like the LA I kind of knew when I first moved out here, because I had a lot of friends in San Pedro and just like going to punk shows and that kind of sprawl of that. Just, it's almost like a Western that takes place in whatever that weird area between the suburbs and the city are of this town.
Yeah, one of those spots on the map that you're like, oh yeah, there's this big chunk here. I'm not sure what that is. Like, I'm on the 5 and I know what this is. And then I'm on the 5 for 10 minutes and now I'm here, but I don't know what happened for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah. You're like, it's like Whittier, Vernon. Yeah. You know, it's like one of these towns that are just, you know, like 10 minutes away from Hollywood and Los Angeles. And that's like truly Los Angeles right there to me.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right. Really, Hal, you want to throw one in the mix?
Sure. I'm going to start with a movie that I think was robbed of a Best Picture Oscar in 1997, I think it was, which is LA Confidential. I think it's a great movie and it captures a specific period of LA, and it's certainly fictionalized, but it also gives you a feel. It's as much as it's sort of tangentially involved in show business, it also feels like a Los Angeles that would have existed and you get to see some of the different neighborhoods at a different time that we drive through now. And you maybe even see some of the architecture, but it also is you can't take Los Angeles out of that movie and have it be the same. It's
right.
It needs Los Angeles to exist.
And iconic locations that I'd never heard of before. Like I'd never heard of the Formosa Cafe until that movie.
Where you're just like oil fields. And then you're like, oh yeah, between here and the airport.
Yep.
Oh yeah, there are derricks over there.
Yep. I drive past them all the time. It's crazy.
You ever go through that area too? It's like you can kind of like drive around these little like roads in that spot and you're just like, you're in the middle of the city, almost the middle. You know, and it's just, and you're just in the middle of nowhere, it feels like.
Well, isn't a big chunk of that landfill?
Oh, isn't? Baldwin?
I had heard that there are areas down there that are just straight up landfills, and there's the oil derricks on top of those. But for years, that's why there's no development on it. Or was part of why there's no development on it. But there are weird oil derricks all over LA.
Yeah.
That are super hidden. Have you guys ever heard about these? Like there's one at Beverly Hills High School.
Yeah. And the La Brea, there's one on, La Brea near the Target. Highland near the Target. Yeah. It's got a covering over it.
Yeah. They just like put a silo around it. And they're like, nope, we're not digging for oil right here. Don't worry about it.
Wow.
Yeah. You mind your business.
I mean, the Grove, they struck oil there. It was like a farm. They struck oil and then they turned it into a racetrack. Wherever, the farmer's market, the Grove area. That's a whole like that. There was tons of oil there and they made tons of money.
Unbelievable.
And they're still making tons of money right there at the Grove. They got a Prada in there and a Sephora. And
a two-floor American Girl store, if that's still there.
I just had this flash that I might have missed. I think Repo Man actually maybe takes place in Orange County or Corona or something like that. I might have messed up.
Hold on. I'm going to look it up right now.
Oh.
Where does Repo?
I had this flash of like the opening credits where it's
Los Angeles. You're okay.
Great. All right. I'm going to put the first of my choices on here. Now this is one, Jonah, you and I moved to Los Angeles the same year in 2001. Mm-hmm. And a movie came out right before I moved to LA that at the time seemed aspirational. And then in retrospect, I was like, oh, this is more a satire on these dudes than it is Hollywood aspirations. And that is Swingers.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But of course, when I first moved to LA, it was, we're going to the Dresden. We're going to that 9-hole par-3 course in Los Feliz. That whole movie is an East Side feel.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's like really, it was one of the first movies I remember seeing, like when it came out, being like, it's like, oh, this is the sad part of trying to do showbiz. It's just like hanging out. I was like, oh, just playing video games. It's like, is this? And then like, I also hated Swing. So I was like, is this the?
Where am I going? Why am I moving here?
One of the reasons I thought I didn't want to move to Los Angeles, actually. Like when I saw that movie, I was like, oh yeah, it's those kinds of guys.
Yeah.
You have to have a wallet chain. You have to have a zoot suit at all times.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But like that movie to me was, I wanted to move to Los Angeles. I liked the idea of Los Angeles. And I watched a movie. I was like, yeah, that, you know what? This seems like Singing in the Rain is amazing and glitzy and glamorous. This seems like the achievable version of Los Angeles. The like, let me just get by. And I also drove a Cavalier, which is the car that he drove that they made fun of him driving.
Well, that's what's funny about that is that that's almost kind of the thing of, the story you hear about, the Sex Pistols playing in Manchester. And it was, it's not that they were the most amazing band or the great band, but they were a band that showed everyone in that room. They're like, wait, I can do that. I can go. The Smiths and you got the Buzzcocks and you got,
Yeah. Like that whole- they all came out. Jackson Pollock smears paint all over one canvas and suddenly conceptual art is everywhere. All right, Jonah, what else you got for us?
Well, this one is this one's near and dear to my heart. It's my favorite movie of all time, and it is very much a movie, but it kind of coinciding with what you're saying about the I can do that. It's Ed Wood. It's Tim.
Oh yeah,
I got to think of another movie for my three.
Oh no, because that's my favorite movie, and it really it does kind of feel like how you feel when you're out here and you're kind of starting to make stuff and you realize how big when you like, I always say like when I got out here, it's like, I'm like, I didn't know how to get in. I know I wanted to like act and make stuff but it was just like this, it's almost like there's this dome over the business in this town. You're in it, but you're right outside of it and you can see it. And you just kind of like got to find that way in. And for me, it was like, you know, I was like, oh, if I go up on stage at a coffee shop and start doing stand up, then I'm in showbiz. And I found the back door to the bubble. And then you sneak in and but like once you're in there too, you're like, oh, there's a whole other hierarchy happening in here. And Ed Wood is just that DIY spirit that I love so much. Just that, like, let's make something. Let's just make something.
If it's not LA as a character in a physical sense, which it is in that movie, it's like he's all around Los Angeles and it's a, you know, Burbank tract home that Bela Lugosi walks out of, or the dentist at that point. I'm not sure who it was.
And he's going to like all the, you know, the bars over there, you know, what's the Michelli's, or not the other one. There's that, those old timey bars. There's Musso and Frank's, Michelli.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't even
that I've been remember. To. And like, yeah. And then he gets back and he tells his wife, you know, his girlfriend, like, it's like, he lives in, like, I met Bela Lugosi. He lives in Baldwin Hills. He's very nice. And just like, you know, just saying, I was like, oh, I've driven by a sign for Baldwin Hills.
It's like this whole city is a Planet Hollywood.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, I recognize that door.
Yes. It's such a feel good movie for me. And I know it's, you know, it's not a real life, you know, one to one version. I know.
Of course.
Harry kind of made it, you know, a feel good version of that story of addiction and maybe exploitation and whatnot.
Right.
But it really is just something. And to know the story too, and to like, to, you know, on Bela Lugosi's birthday, and I'm not like a goth, but I, you know, but I love showbiz. And on Bela Lugosi's birthday, I looked up where his house was in the hills, which was a very like nice brick house up kind of near Griffith Park area. And then I went to the apartment that he died in, and it's just down the hill. It's wow. You know, 5-minute drive.
Oh wow!
He was at his height. Into this little stucco two-story, you know, the parking spot below the apartment, and you could see the corner apartment that the room he died in, and it's one of the biggest stars in the world. And then so that's always kind of like a neat like reminder, I guess, for myself. Just kind of go, look, it's nothing's permanent.
Yeah, this town is up and down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it really is like, it's a great version of that joyful Los Angeles exuberant spirit of, no, I'm going to get a movie made.
Yeah.
Well, how do you get a movie made? Well, you need money. Okay. Call the mafia guys. And you're like, what? No. Like it's a lot of fun. And also everyone in that movie, aside from LA as a character in it, just, I wouldn't even call them cameos. It's just an incredible cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Martin Landau with his pull the strings monologue, and Bill Murray and.
Bill Murray's Bunny Breckenridge was such a great, great move on their part.
And yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's great. Max Casella. And that was the role that Dana Gould was up for, the Max Casella role.
Oh, really?
Whoa.
Max Casella, who will always in my mind be the kid from Newsies.
Yeah. In my head, he's Vinny from Doogie Howser.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, of course.
Dana, what's crazy about that movie too is like, you know, that's how Dana Gould and I became friends, is that I made a reference to it. He's like, you know, Ed Wood. I was like, yeah, it's my favorite movie. So it's my second favorite movie. And I was like, what's your first favorite movie? Planet of the Apes. And he's like, well, yes. And then,
perfect.
I mean, like he actually had a very similar story to a relationship that Ed and Bella had in the movie with, Myra Nurmi, who played Vampira.
No kidding.
The original Vampira, and where he was like taking care of her and helping her out during the later years of her life.
Wow.
She told a story once, and it was a phrase that stuck in my head, and it felt like such a both hopeful and sad LA phrase. And she was talking about living in Los Angeles. This was on NPR once. They were interviewing her, and she said, I kept myself camera ready for something like 70 years or into however old she was at that point. And the idea of like, that is a disciplined LA performer right there. Mm-hmm. Regardless of how much work she did or didn't get, that is like her idea of like, no, I am Vampira. I am a star. this is what I do and I shall remain at any point they can call. And yeah. just the phrase camera ready, I guess sticks in my head every time I reach for a bag of Tostitos.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's the point of like, and it's funny, Bruce Campbell talks about that a lot in his first book, If Chains Could Kill, I think, his book. And he just talks about where, when it was time to do Army of Darkness, like when it was time to do the studio film, the big one, you know, of the Evil Dead series, like that he just started working out like crazy. And he's like, there's certain things you got, if you're going to be the lead in a big movie, you have to look it. You have to. Real fit. You have to have the teeth. You have to have, you know, it's, if you're going to be a movie star, which that role needed to have a movie star for that idea to work. And, I guess like apparently like, you know, he, to keep up the body, like he would have to work out between, you know, setups and stuff like that to like squeeze it all in. Cause he was also kind of a producer on the, you know, movie as well.
Yeah.
And I guess, Sam Raimi just constantly would peek into his little workout room and make fun of him.
Hey man, look, he was doing the job.
Yeah. Doing the job.
Yeah. I've been hired before and I was like, oh man, I'm real excited about this job. Wish I got this when I was a little skinnier.
Oh, most I've ever been on camera was in a stretch where I was like the heaviest as an adult of Meltdown. And then, like Mystery Science Theater and like the other show I was doing in America, like that's when I gained the most weight as an adult, was during that stretch of time. And I was like, since then I'm like 50 pounds lighter. I'm like, oh, mother.
Yeah. Cast me now. Come on, guys.
Listen, if they don't like you at your heaviest, they don't deserve you at your thinnest.
No, but I need them the most.
That's right. Well, that's true. Welcome to Hollywood.
All right, Hal, what do you have next?
Oh man, what I like about Ed Wood as a choice is I feel like it releases me from a lot of showbiz movies. Like I have, we'll see if they come up. If they don't, we'll do like a little montage. I want to do a super gritty movie from 2001 that covers again, like sort of east side towards the southern part of Los Angeles, which is Training Day. Just like unmistakably, those are neighborhoods in Los Angeles. They're not neighborhoods where I've spent a ton of time. Like they're neighborhoods where generally like, you're told not to go. They're the rougher neighborhoods. And it's, but it feels like a really honest kind of depiction of them. And it is the least showbiz of any of the movies I could think of, but like very real. Like this is day to day Los Angeles. And this is stuff that could be happening and is happening and should not be happening. And for that reason, it just feels like a good movie to have on the list.
Yeah, there's plus it's just a great movie.
It is.
It's a great
Denzel
performance.
Washington, so good. Ethan Hawke, also great. Terry Crews, who I think that's the movie in which he was an extra, and they kept using him, and then he, like that was like where he sort of helped to sort of ascend his career.
That's how he got
mistaken.
How he got into the NFL when he was an extra in Training Day.
Yeah, that got him into the NFL. I mean, his showbiz career. I think he was doing extra work on that. I don't think they brought him in as an NFL guy, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know.
I want him to have a Hollywood story. He's like such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Look, he was playing football at this Soda Jerk.
Yeah.
And he was discovered by producers.
The Soda Jerk was the old name for the stadium where the NFL played in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's right. That's what they called it.
Soda Jerk Field.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to throw one on there. Because I live in the Valley, I want to represent the Valley. But I'm torn, guys. Maybe you can help me out on this one. I think I know the direction I want to go, but I feel like I want to put, because the city is always a character in his movies, specifically my part of the city up here in the Valley. I want to put a Paul Thomas Anderson movie on here, and I'm trying to figure out if I want it to be Magnolia or Boogie Nights. Now, I live right off of Magnolia, so part of me wants to just say, oh, it's Magnolia. But I think as far as like a film that captures a lot of things we've talked about so far, the city itself as a character, the ups and downs of show business, and both the glamorous side and the seedy side, I think that's Boogie Nights. I think it does a good job of using small pieces of all of these different things. That said, and also I feel Magnolia is more of a character study. And Boogie Nights is more of a study of an industry that is so specifically Southern California at that time.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. And plus you get a little South Bay in there because he's from Torrance.
That's right.
Hey, yeah. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's the one I'm picking. I'm going with Boogie Nights.
Yeah. I'm also realizing, too, like when I said, when I picked Repo Man and Ed Wood, I kind of guess I thought of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
That are movies, as opposed to what best represents LA, which I think is a different kind of conversation.
Well, that's
true.
But this conversation is, what is the best LA movie? Now, the representation of LA, that we can talk about once we have our list. I think that is going to be a huge consideration. But technically, that wasn't Tommy Bobo's question. and you answer the question that Tommy Bobo gives you.
Make a pick a movie for me. I'm Tommy Bobo. I like movies about L.A.
Hey, Mr. Bobo says he likes movies about L.A.
Yeah, make him choose on a podcast.
I think there are a couple that we, just so that we can keep giving our personal faves, I think there's a couple that if they don't appear on this, we'll just pass them through anyway, because they're sort of generally regarded, I think.
Yeah, I guess my third one then I think is a good encapsulation of the spectrum of LA, and it's What's Up Rockers.
I don't know this movie.
No.
Oh, it's great. It's like, you know, these like East LA, you know, Latino skater Hesher kids that they don't really like fit in like with like the neighborhood they kind of live in. And then they're all skaters. So they go in to like Beverly Hills and Century City and kind of show. And then like they go skate and hang out over there. Like they take the bus in and then they kind of, it's just kind of, it really just shows the, you know, the dichotomy of Los Angeles of being like, it's like, oh yeah, it's mainly just a big, great Latino suburban neighborhood. Most of this city.
Most of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you just take a bus and then all of a sudden someone who's like born and raised here a few generations deep is going to feel completely out of place, you know, in it. And I do too. And I'm, you know, I'm no class warrior. But when I go into that neighborhood, like, it's like, I don't feel good. I don't feel right when I'm in Beverly Hills or when I'm in Century City or in some of these other places. Like, I still like when I was 25 when I realized like Gap wasn't like a high end clothing store.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it's true. Like Beverly Hills, particularly like Cannon Drive, that whole area, Rodeo too, are like, I know some of the brands. I know the one, the Bulgari or whatever watches where the U is a V, but most of them, I don't know any of the brands at all. Mm-hmm. They like, I don't know how any of these stores are able to afford their rent or stay in business. And yet they're there. It's like there's a completely different Los Angeles that we like, I could have $1 billion and I don't know that I would experience it.
Yeah.
In the same way that they do, like and from children on.
You see these people like walking around with the bags, and you're like, I don't even think I can afford the bag, the paper,
right?
Bring whatever's inside. Like, you know, it's like people see the Grove, especially lately on TV with again, you know, tagged up and stuff. But it's like, it's like, yeah, that's nice, but it gets so much nicer.
Yeah.
The further you go into these neighborhoods, and it's disgusting.
I mean, like, I think about like if I went to the Westfield Mall, one of the great old school Valley malls, I feel like I could go inside there and there's a good chance that I would be physically able to purchase nearly any single item in that mall. Yeah. Like have the physical capability to do it.
Or
I think if
store.
I went to
something from Wet Seal.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like if I go to Rodeo Drive, there is not a single store in that whole area that like just walking in the door feels out of my price range, my league range, my class range. You know what I mean? It's a weird place that feels like it's for not very many people and then for tourists to go and look at, which I feel like when I go there, I feel like a tourist.
Yeah.
Because it is one of those places that you take family when they come to visit LA. You're like, okay, you want to see Beverly Hills and Rodeo Drive, and because that's all glitzy and you've seen it in movies.
Yeah. Yeah. But you want to take them to like this good restaurant in East Hollywood. You know, you want to take them to Jitlada to go get some spicy food and say, hey, look, there's a receipt that had Matt Groening. You're like, yeah.
What's your go-to restaurant when you have people come in from out of town? Where do you take them?
Shoot.
Yeah, where do I take people? I mean, mainly I just take them to vegan places.
Are you vegan?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So it's like I just kind of go, this, see, it can be good.
Okay. Let me ask you this then, as a vegan, because in my neighborhood, what part of town are you?
Highland Park.
In my neighborhood, there are two vegan places who have two vastly different views on vegan food.
Mm-hmm.
There's Veggie Grill.
Love it.
Which is great. It is a celebration of the vegetable and a celebration of veganism. Then there is Something Vegan, which seems more like vegan versions of classics that I knew from mostly bars, because it's like burgers and nachos and wings and all of these. Are you a celebrant of the vegetable, or are you a substitutor?
Oh, I think, you know, I like both, and I think both are, you know, great. It's just sometimes nothing beats a sandwich, you know.
Yeah, I feel you.
Nothing beats a burger. Nothing, you know, it's for the longest time, I like ate very vegan and also ate meat, and it just kind of depended on what I felt like at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, because sometimes I did like the taste of like garden burgers, and sometimes I just kind of felt like a garden burger as opposed to like a beef burger, you know.
I feel you. I used to get a veggie burger at Subway and put bacon on it.
Yeah. You know what? I did that too, because it's good. It's a good combo.
It's a yeah it's pretty delicious.
It's like, it was the Veggie Max patty.
Yeah. Veggie Max patty, and then the smartest animal.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I apologize all of my vegan friends.
You already ate it. It's fine. You have to live with that.
That's true.
Just live with it and have joy in it.
Yeah. I did bring up that I was vegan mainly so I could hold it over you guys. That's
fair.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, they
said, like, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. That's kind of the same idea with nothing you eat will taste as good as telling people that you do that way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love it. No, I asked. You did not offer. I asked if you were vegan.
Oh, and I gave it up.
You really did. You did not. No, I don't want to talk about that. You went straight in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're not wrong. You're better than both of us. All right, Hal, what's your next movie on the list?
Oh, man, I have so many I want to add, but I feel like if this movie is not on the list,
I'm going to add Pulp Fiction and Chinatown, regardless of if anyone says them.
Okay, I'll pull back on Chinatown because that was the one I was going to add.
Yeah.
I want to go with Friday because it's a classic comedy and it takes place in South Central, and that's not a neighborhood that's generally served, but that's like LA. That is a entire, again, like another part of LA that I don't have a ton of experience with. And it is a really, really funny movie. It's great. It's really like fires on all cylinders, and it's also like it's about the neighborhood in which it takes place.
Yeah. I remember I love that movie. I think it's one of the funniest. It's one of the best comedies. And when I was living in San Pedro, you know, down, which is this kind of the South Bay of Los Angeles, still part of Los Angeles, the city of Los Angeles, because San Pedro is not its own city, but down by the ports. I remember I lived on a street, and there was like about three houses in a row full of people that were all friends. And we all like just sat on porches. Like, you know, you would get off of work and you would sit on the porch. People would come by. People would walk by. And like, I was just like, I remember always being like, this is like Friday. This is what Los Angeles is about. Just sitting on a porch, and we would just drink and then people would kind of come in and out. And sometimes things would get crazy.
Yeah.
There you go.
It is a great depiction of, that's so often the best place to be in Los Angeles. When you live in New York, the worst place to be is home. Cause that's the worst thing about New York. All the apartments are tiny, but the city is amazing. In LA, you've got a little more space. You got a yard. Everybody drives everywhere. So one destination is nice. And if you have people in the neighborhood, there's just something lovely about a porch hang in Los Angeles.
Hmm. Yep.
All right. I'm going to throw onto this list. I made this giant list and now I don't know what to pull from it. You know what? I'm going to say I do want to put another Hollywood movie on the list because I just love this movie. I think it's brilliant. I think it's one of the best versions. I think it's what La La Land wanted to be or is inspired by. I think so many people have been inspired by it over the years, and it does have some locations in it, and that's Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think that movie best encapsulates the joy and the promise, albeit entirely fictional, of Hollywood. Like that, if people move to LA for the Hollywood dream, I think Singing in the Rain is the version of it that many people come for.
Yeah. No, it is. It's such a good movie.
Yeah.
It's so effortlessly huge and big.
Yeah.
That there's that modern dance part that you can take a nap in towards the end.
Look, there's some moments, sure. I get it.
That's why I think I would just be fine with that whole sequence if I didn't love the rest of the movie so much. If the rest of the movie was paced like a motherfucker, that movie moves and it's funny and it just builds and then it just takes. And I know that's kind of the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to do this sequence that's like, and then they tell a whole other kind of story. And I know that was the idea of it, but I just go, get on with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Give us more Gene Hagen, who is, in my opinion, the greatest thing about that movie. Mm-hmm. Gene Hagen, who played Lena Lamont, is one of the underrated comedy foils because she gets to play a sort of comic villain, but also with this insane, insane slapstick voice.
Yeah.
And all the scenes with the microphone. I think it's just, she's such an MVP in that movie. And it's so funny.
Yeah. I just recently watched, I never saw it when it came out. I just watched it for the first time, was The Artist, which I think is a nice little companion piece too.
I did love The Artist. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And you know what? I knew I was going to like it because I love his movies anyway, but I was like, God, and that guy, was this
Jean Reno with the, when he took that helicopter into the tunnel at the end of,
I was blown away by that guy. Amazing.
You know, another movie that I think is a companion piece to it is Hail Caesar, which I think is a real, like, that feels like the Coen brothers movie that's maybe the most divisive among people who either love it or hate it. And as soon as the movie ended, when I saw it in the theater, I was like, oh, this is a slice of life movie. And once I latched onto that premise, I thought it was so good and such a great snapshot. Again, like an idealized, this oddly warped, Coenized, idealized version of what Hollywood is, from the number with Scarlett Johansson and the pool to the entire scene with what's his name, young Han Solo being directed. I can't remember his name. Sorry.
Taron Egerton? No.
Sure. Mix them up, Mark.
No.
All of young Hollywood.
All Han Solos look the same to me.
That's right.
But they have those, like, they'll do those every once in a while, the slice of life, and they're not immediately apparent, like a serious man. That's a slice of life of like Midwest, Jewish Midwesterners. And then you got Inside Llewyn Davis, which is like, just things happen. And sometimes because they're trying to subvert their own expectations, I think, a lot with that stuff. But yeah, I think Hail Caesar is a lot of fun. And then, Hail Caesar, The Artist, and Singing in the Rain, those are all movies about studios as well.
Which are a huge part of life in Los Angeles, is they're everywhere.
For anyone I know, I don't know anyone in part of the studio system. The one time I've been, on a lot is because I was visiting a friend that, it was a PA on, a TV show.
Maybe it's because I worked at Universal for so long. I worked at Universal Studios for 9 years. And so that was just such a huge part of my life, being on this giant movie studio. And we used to jog the back lot at night as our workout time before rehearsals, before we do late night rehearsals. And there's just something really cool about running around the Western town and where Lon Chaney did all of his horror movies.
Yeah.
It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous back lot.
I think it's mainly I've auditioned on lots before, but I think the whole process of getting on the lot is what makes me f up the auditions.
Oh, that it takes you a long time, and that it's like, that is it that
excited.
It's nerve wracking or what?
You're excited. It's
the parking, getting there, finding the spot, looking at the map, also all this time to build up. And then everyone knows why you're there. This lost person with sides
holding a picture of themselves.
Just where's fame?
See, the last two times I was on a lot for audition, one of which went really well, one of which went very poorly. Both times I walked out, I was like, yes, I have an appointment to be on this movie lot and walk through with signs. Like, oh, yes, I remember you background actors. I'm here to read for this thing I won't get. Hollywood.
I was in an episode. I was supposed to have like three lines or something like that, in an episode of the Sarah Silverman Program.
Great show.
Yeah, great show. And then I think it was like the morning of or the night before, I get a call from Sarah and I think, you know, John Trader or some of that, going like, hey, we got bad news. We had to like shuffle around stuff for the budget. And because we had so many speaking lines, we now have to like either take your part out or take your lines out. And I was like, oh, well, and like, I didn't want to gamble on not being in the show at all because it right. wasn't. Mm-hmm. Already on the way, and I didn't want to be like, yeah, well, you'll get me next season or something like that. I was just like, no, I'll go. I don't care if I don't have lines. I just want to be a part of it. And then like the weird thing, it was the worst thing, because technically now I wasn't like a principal. And mm-hmm. so I had to stand in front of like two different coordinators while they argued who was responsible for me and where I should be hanging out.
Jeez. Oh, my God. Yeah. If you're like in, if you're in background holding or if you mm-hmm. get to go to the green room and hang out with your friends.
Exactly. And then luckily, I think Doug Benson was walking by because I think he was like in the episode or in another scene they were shooting for that. And he's like, he's fine. He'll be in my area. And like, it was just the most like degrading moment.
Wait, Hollywood has degrading moments? That doesn't seem right.
Yeah. I always think about like LA Story is also like another like LA. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's in LA. Nobody knows, like the roller skates and it's just a fantasy version of it.
Sure. But it is a rich person's point of view of what would be fun in Los Angeles.
Yeah. They have, isn't the, mm-hmm. the whole half calf, non decaf with a twist of lemon. That's at the Ivy.
Is it the Ivy?
Yeah. And I went to the Ivy recently, I think for either my father's birthday or my wife's birthday. What, somebody's birthday, we went there, and the entire time I could think was, nobody in this restaurant thinks I should be here, including me.
There are so many places like that in LA. And frequently I found myself, it's on set that that's the case. But yeah, like what do you do? Like, but that's the thing. Like here, there is so much imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even the people who are top of their game and killing it, it's still imposter syndrome is impossible to avoid here.
You were set up for it.
Yeah. I mean, and it will happen even when you feel that you're like at your peak.
Maybe. Yeah.
We were shooting a second season of Mystery Science Theater mm-hmm. studios. And I saw like Ted Sarandos and a few like Netflix, high-end Netflix executives like walking into the, you know, the soundstage, and I'm in my jumpsuit, you know, all done up. And then like, mm-hmm. I go, oh, hey. And then like the guy just goes, hey, where's Patton? And he goes, hey, where's Patton? I go, oh, he's over there. Yeah, we're just getting ready to shoot a scene. He's like, right on. And then just walks away. Like, it's like, I'm the human. I'm a human and the quote unquote, like the star of this show that you're putting out. And I'm not saying like I'm the most famous. I'm just saying like I'm the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
Just like, where's Patton Oswalt? Okay, well, see you around.
Oh, LA.
By the way, another companion piece to Ed Wood, that idea of self-made movies, is Bowfinger, which is another Steve Martin LA mm-hmm. kind of showbiz love letter that is sort of like a forgotten, feels like it's a forgotten classic for both him and Eddie Murphy. And it's for each of them, I think, one of their best movies.
I remember that.
I absolutely love it.
I liked it. And then I remember like there was that time when I first started doing comedy, I remember M-Bar and Bob Odenkirk had this joke he would always do. He's like, yeah, I saw the, they had the special edition DVD of Bowfinger. When I looked at the special features, it said, does not include the movie Bowfinger.
Jeez. Ridiculous. Come on, Bob. M-Bar, a classic. This was M-Bar. You're talking the...
2003.
When three. It was Death Ray was there, right?
Yeah, well, yeah.
You doing Death Ray?
It was just called the M-Bar for a while. And I think like maybe like a year and a half in, they came up with the name Comedy Death Ray, mm-hmm. and then it became Comedy Bang Bang.
But yeah, I was at the first show. Like, I was at an open mic, and BJ and Scott Aukerman were just like, they're like, hey, we're about to do a show. Like, we're going to start the show next week. Come on by.
I love it. That's Los Angeles. And that's, you know what? That feels like that's more of an LA story to me than anything you see in a movie where it's a producer is in the audience and sees someone do a thing and walks up to them and says, you know, come to my office on Monday and we'll sign a contract. No, it's you go to a comedy theater with like-minded people who do a thing that you like. They like what you do in that same world. And then you guys spend years, you know, crossing each other's paths and working on each other's stuff. And it gets more and more notoriety.
Yeah. I always think of a line that Steve Martin has in Born Standing Up, where he's just like, I wasn't fighting against a bunch of naysayers. I'm paraphrasing here, but like, I didn't like fight my way and crawl my way up to the top. I just took incremental steps with a few intuitive leaps. And I always think about that. And
oh, yeah.
I had those, like, I know I had that one where I finally got like a job, like as a writer on a show that was just going to keep going. And it was a crappy show, like, infotainment, but like I was in charge of kind of like the comedy bits and it was going to keep on going. But then there was this funnier show that like I would be able to like direct sketches and do all these kind of weirder things that I wanted to do. And they only had 8 episodes picked up. And this other show was going to go for 2 years. It was already going to it was on Current TV. And I was like, oh man, I know. So I took the intuitive leap. Like I was like, I just want to follow like, you know, the artistic passion, the excitement. Mm-hmm. And then ended up like I met people and then it kind of got better and better, you know, and because I took that intuitive leap. So it's like, that's the main thing. It's rare that it's like, you made it, you know, not everyone like that, you know, BJ Novak, like mm-hmm. even though the guy was extremely talented and very funny right out of the gate, Jared Grody always used to have this joke about him that said, BJ Novak moved out to Los Angeles with the shirt on his back and the directions to a staff writing job on a network sitcom.
Well, he made the most of it. All right. We have our 9. And I, of course, because I do feel like these two are already on the Mount Rushmore of Los Angeles movies, Chinatown and Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about them yet. We can talk about them now.
I also, real quick, it's not going to be in the top, but I want to say Beginners is also a good LA movie.
Beginners?
Just exists in Los Angeles and on the east side, like Silver Lake area in a great way.
Well, look, if we're throwing out honorable mentions that we don't have to really talk about, Hal already threw out Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I'll throw out 500 Days of Summer and Double Indemnity. Both great LA movies.
Yeah. Sunset Boulevard.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
great. That's noir great meets Hollywood.
Big Lebowski is oddly Hollywood, even though it's again like a weird Coenized version of it. Mm-hmm. And Star Lanes, the bowling alley at it, which no longer exists. And our friend Eric Edelstein has a pin. He was there the night it closed, and he got a pin from the lanes.
Is that where that thing's from?
Uh huh.
I never knew that. I just knew he had a bowling pin in his house.
Yeah, I think we were already together at Second City by the time it mm-hmm. happened, and he was there because he was so into that movie. And going there, like that became an LA experience for him, going to that bowling lane. So it was a shame when it closed.
Yeah,
I remember like everyone being so disappointed that it didn't have those light up neon lights. Those like
yeah.
You're like, hey, this doesn't look exactly like it. What, did they had set dressing on this thing?
That's why they tore it down.
Yeah.
It was torn down by the people of Los Angeles who visited. Actually, tourists. They didn't live here. They were just upset. So they
and John, bare hands. The diner they go to is still standing, but only for rent for shooting.
Yeah, that's the one on La Brea, right?
It's on the Wilshire. Yeah. Or it's a Wilshire and Fairfax, right by the Peterson Automotive Museum.
Right.
And I never think of that from the Big Lebowski. I always think of that from American History X.
That's right.
Because when I moved to LA, I was like, that's not in Venice. Which, by the way, it does have another function now, which it actually kind of doesn't need anymore. If you've been by there recently, they have all of these surfaces on the outside that are paintable. It was a giant Bernie Sanders mural. That was Bernie's mm-hmm. California headquarters.
Right.
Was that diner.
Yes.
Even though it's a lot of New York, there's a lot of specifically LA things that happen in Usual Suspects.
That is true. Yeah, when they come out to
Korean Bell, when they get to Los Angeles, that's the French Korean Friendship Bell, which is actually right next to Sunken City in a Point Furman Park, which is where they spread Donnie's ashes in The Big Lebowski.
Wow.
Man, when Edelstein was into that movie, do you know how many times I got yelled at and called Donnie? I didn't catch the reference. I saw that movie once in the theater.
Nah.
Why is he calling me Donnie? I'm Mark. Does he not remember me?
Can I talk to him about it?
Let's take a quick break. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm sorry. I keep on derailing.
Oh, yeah. Please. Not at all. This whole show is about derailing. We could have picked this movie in three seconds.
Can I say two more before we take a break? Just two.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Hal, I didn't get to yours.
Two cop movies. One is Die Hard, which is not really about the city, but about like a New York guy who's transplanted. And the Nakatomi Plaza is owned by Fox, so you can drive past the actual building pretty much all the time.
It's the same building. The inside is where they shot Mad Men.
Yes.
Oh, no kidding.
LA Center Studios, right next to downtown.
And then the other is, I have a weird thing where I've, even as a Jewish guy, I've compartmentalized Mel Gibson's films to everything before Passion of the Christ being stuff that I enjoy. And I think Lethal Weapon, which is a sort of a genre-creating film, also kind of took cops out of LA and or out of New York. Like it felt like that sort of had like a ownership of cop drama and brought it to Los Angeles and made the city as the films progressed became more of a character, specifically the third one where Murtaugh's son, one of his friends is killed because he gets jumped by a gang, I think.
Yeah. We also really should mention Boys in the Hood, which is a very LA
movie. Yes.
Oh yeah.
There's a whole speech about gentrification as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look, guys, I have a very long list that I've been deleting movies from.
It's like just blaze through it, and we won't stop and talk about anyone.
Yeah.
Okay. Same. I will blaze through the list that I have, and I won't stop and talk about any of them. Okay. Blade Runner, Heat, La La Land, The Player, Barton Fink, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Mulholland Drive, Straight Outta Compton, L.A. Story, Jackie Brown. I'm skipping the ones we've already said. Safe. Magnolia, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Clueless, Drive, Boys in the Hood, Speed, Rebel Without a Cause, Punch Drunk Love, Die Hard, We Got, To Live and Die in LA, The Graduate, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, Troop Beverly Hills, Beverly Hills Cop 1 and 2, and of course, Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Perfect. Now no one can get angry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We said all of them, everybody.
Also The Big Picture.
Great. Okay.
We forgot about The Player.
Yeah. I said The Player, didn't I?
I don't know.
I thought you went too fast,
Mark. None of the movies you said count.
I'm like the Micro Machines guy.
I was gonna say.
When we come back, we're going to dig through these movies and we're going to find out which movie is the best Los Angeles movie of all time. But in the meantime, please enjoy hearing about all of the other, not all, some of the other great podcasts on the Maximum Fun Network.
Two of them.
Hi, I'm Jackie Cation.
Hi, I'm Lori Kilmartin.
And we have a podcast called The Jackie and Lori Show. Who are you, Lori Kilmartin?
Oh, my God. So much pressure. I've been doing stand-up since 1987. I'm a writer for Conan. I've written a couple books, have a couple CDs out, have a special out. Who are you, Jackie?
Well, I, too, am a stand-up comic since 1984. And I do the road like a maniac and don't have a cool writing job, but I have four albums out, working on a new album. We talk about stand-up. We talk about all the different parts of stand-up comedy. So that's the Jackie and Lori Show, and you should subscribe on Maximum Fun if you want to hear that.
And I would encourage you not to.
Hi, I'm Dave Hill from Before, and I'm very excited to bring Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident back to Maximum Fun, where it belongs. You can get brand new episodes every Friday on MaximumFun.org or, you know, wherever. And while my partner Chris Gersbeck and I might lack in specific subject matter on our podcast, we make up for in special effects. Chris, add something cool right here. Also, we have explosions, animal noises, and sometimes even this. Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident, every Friday on Maximum Fun. Chris, do another explosion right here.
All right, we're back. Let's look at this list, guys. I know it was a little bit of cheating to put Pulp Fiction and Chinatown on there, but they're both, I mean, they're AFI top 10 or to top 20 movies of all time already. And LA is such a huge character in both of those.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them are by, of course, as so often is the case on this show when we're comparing things, problematic. One for its director, a nearly perfect film by a very problematic director, mm-hmm. and another nearly perfect film with some very problematic language in it.
Mm-hmm.
That said, let's talk about these movies. You guys can see the list, yes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where do you want to start? How do you want to do this? Do you want to eliminate one at a time and give leaving applause?
You know, I'm going to take out one of mine. I'm going to take out Repo Man because it kind of exists, even though it is set in LA, it kind of exists nowhere. And that's kind of the idea mm-hmm. of it, I think, you know?
Right.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's have that conversation now then about place. What do you think makes an LA movie, the character of LA in a movie? What makes it the character or which of these use it best, I guess?
Showbiz guys.
Mm-hmm. Say that again. You cut out a little bit.
Oh, we're three showbiz guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like we're going to lean towards something that involves showbiz. But that's our perception. That's our, you know, that's our point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and are we going to try and usurp that, by saying like, it's like, well, you know, this movie, even though I don't know. That's the trouble I'm having right now.
Like there are more people in LA who are the characters from What's Up Rockers than there are people in LA who are the characters from Swingers.
So like all my friends from like down in San Pedro area, it's like none of them are involved in showbiz. Like they're in punk band. That doesn't mean, you know, they're not. Like, so if you gave them like this list, you know, they would just say, what's the best LA movie? They like, you know, who knows what they say.
Right.
Right.
So, and right. Definitive, and it's going to go into the time capsule we're all making. So
this is definitive for all time, for all people. So
yeah,
that's it. So we do have to, you know, take that into account.
It's a responsibility that we bear with aplomb. You know,
because you did say we're all show business guys, I will eliminate one of mine that I think is a great, great classic movie, but it is not in remotely an accurate depiction of Hollywood, much less Los Angeles. And that is Singing in the Rain.
Good call.
As wonderful as that movie is, it is not accurate to Hollywood.
I also think that LA Confidential flew because Chinatown had circled the entire galaxy 28 times. I think it's so much better a movie, and they're so similar to one another. Chinatown was going to be my first choice on the list, but I also felt like I'm going to wait it out and see if anybody else adds it. So that's why I went with LA Confidential, which I still love. I can watch it anytime. I think it's another close to a flawless movie with really great performances, but Chinatown is so much better. And it's also about the history of Los Angeles and how it became even more urbanized and mm-hmm. what it was like at that time as it was starting to change. So for that reason, I'm going to take LA Confidential off the list.
Mm. So what we're looking at now is Swingers, Ed Wood, Training Day, Boogie Nights, What's Up Rockers, Friday, Chinatown, and Pulp Fiction. Mm. Yeah, and you know what? If we're looking at character studies of interesting characters where Los Angeles is a character, I think this one is going to suffer from the same thing LA Confidential did, which is, Boogie Nights is a great study of these fascinating underworld characters, and it travels all over LA. But it doesn't do it as well as Pulp Fiction does.
That's very true. Also, the main house that they're in,
mm-hmm.
that's way out in Pomona. Not LA.
Is it really?
Oh.
Kumail and I did a photo shoot there for, I think it was like Wired or something like that. I can't mm-hmm. remember. But it was like, we were taking pictures in this house. And I was like, man, this house looks so familiar. And someone's like, it's the Boogie Nights house. And I just start walking around going, oh my God. It's also way smaller than like you think it's going to be, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But like the pool, the bar, the hallway, the driveway that kind of goes down to where William H. Macy's wife was the dude in front of people. It's like nuts. It was nuts. But like, yeah. So I'd say, we could take out Boogie Nights.
Great. So here's what we're looking at now. We have six remaining. That's two more than a Mount Rushmore gets and five more than we get. So Ed Wood, Training Day, Chinatown, Pulp Fiction, Friday, and What's Up Rockers.
is it my turn to eliminate one?
Oh yeah, is that how it works?
Well, I don't. We don't. We don't have to. We can just talk about it. I want to know more about What's Up Rockers because I've never seen it.
Me too.
I think that we should take it off. it's going to be hard to debate it any further with you guys having never seen it, which is not
true.
Which is not a dig. It's a great movie, and I think it's somewhere. It's streaming somewhere. I think maybe on Amazon Prime. But yeah, it's a fun movie, and it just shows the varied spectrum of Los Angeles. But let's take it out just because it's going to be hard to really dig down any further than what I've told you.
Fair enough. I do feel a little bad about that. First of all, I'm not a vegan, but also because we really don't have, this is not a terribly representational list because of our experiences as people who work in the business we work in. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of Los Angeles is Latino neighborhoods. We're 2.5 hours from Mexico, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. Like we're practically a border town. Actually, when I moved to New York, that was one thing I really missed was LA's Mexican culture. There are a million diverse groups and people and fascinating things in New York. But man, there's something really wonderful and cool and warm and delicious with the food and fun and exciting about Mexican culture in Los Angeles. And it always has been. It's one of those things that made me love it here.
Yeah. It's one of the best things. It's like, most of the neighborhoods I've lived in have been mostly, I've been like one of the spotted white people, in the neighborhood. And I wouldn't have it. I love it. They're just best.
And it also, I see things like in my neighborhood now, like even in my building, I see things that I saw growing up in Tennessee that I'm like, oh, I guess all people aren't that different, except, here they're speaking Spanish and in Tennessee they were speaking English while one guy worked on his car and four people stood around drinking, telling him what he was doing wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, that's where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sam, I think that's just because that's what I was used to growing up in Hawaii. It was just very, very similar. Just same exact thing. Just like people just hanging out.
Yep. Yeah. 100%. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, we do still have a great hanging out movie on this list.
Yeah.
And that is Friday. And with weed being legal in Los Angeles, it is nice that we have some marijuana representation on this list.
Wasn't legal then.
That's true.
That's right. That's right. So wait, what are the four left?
Six left.
There's six left?
Swingers, Edward. Well, we took 11 because of Chinatown and Pulp Fiction.
That's right.
Because those are going to be hard to.
Sure.
Those are going to be hard to beat. Like we knew that there were going to be a lot of fights against Glass Joe and Piston Honda, but we knew we were eventually going to have to fight Mike Tyson.
I like the analogy.
Thanks. So we have Swingers, Edward, Training Day, Chinatown, Pulp Fiction, and Friday.
Jeez.
Are there any other criteria that we're thinking about that would help us? Have we talked about LA as a city? Do all of these represent Los Angeles sufficiently as a city?
I wonder if part of it would be when you think of this movie, does it evoke Los Angeles? Is it something you identify with the city? If I lived anywhere else and, most of these films I saw either within a couple of years of moving to Los Angeles or they came out after I had moved here. So I just wonder if any of these feels like, that is a definite, like Training Day is a great movie and it is, you appreciate it at a much deeper level, the Los Angeles of all of it once you've lived here. But I don't know if I'd seen it outside of the city, if I would be like Los Angeles, that's like Training Day city. Like that's
a very good point. Cause if you say it that way, then like I start to lean more towards Swingers, Friday, Ed Wood, maybe not even Ed Wood, like Swingers. It's like Swingers is like a very LA movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true.
And using that by that metric, while they are both great movies, and I gave this one a pass right to the finals, but I don't know how many people see Pulp Fiction and think Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's like saying like same thing. It's like Reservoir Dogs is when you see it, when you live here, you know exactly. I mean, I live two blocks away from where, Steve Buscemi shot the lady in the car. That's like right down the street near Pat and Lorraine's and all that. But it's like, it's not an LA movie. Same with Pulp Fiction. And that's, even Jackie Brown, which is, that's a not Torrance. What town is the Del Amo Mall in? Is it Torrance?
It is in Torrance, yeah.
Yeah. Which is its own city, which is in L.A.
Right. So, yeah, mad boy, you go to these cities on the outside of Los Angeles. They do not like being called L.A.
Yeah, exactly.
The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. What a compromise that was. The Angels Angels of Anaheim. For God's sake. Now they're just the Los Angeles Angels, right?
Yeah.
They straight up just got rid of Anaheim.
That's right.
So yeah, do you want to eliminate Training Day and Pulp Fiction from this list?
Yes.
I think so.
Eliminating some great movies.
Great movies.
They're all great. That's the thing. They're all great movies, but which one do you think Los Angeles? Here's what we have left. We have Swingers, we have Ed Wood, we have Chinatown, and we have Friday.
Chinatown, even though it is about Los Angeles, not really an LA movie, I'd say.
Yeah.
I think it's just mainly because it's a story. The two different stories of the water and the, but it's not really, that could have happened. That story could have happened somewhere else.
I don't know though, because like the whole thing is that there's steel, like it, because of its historical accuracy to that specific thing. You know what I mean? That whole Mulholland stealing the water from the Colorado River. But I get what you're saying in like, these are noir characters and like an office could be an office anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, showing up at a construction site could be showing up at a construction site anywhere. Is it that it's less in the visuals?
I don't know. Cause it's now the oldest movie we have on here, but it's also, it takes place in a time even way before that.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I think we're running into, showbiz guys that have really just known this city intimately for only, a couple decades.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it also, the thing about Chinatown is it's about the period and it's about Jack Nicholson's character way more than it's about Los Angeles is the backdrop for everything.
Right. And it drives the plot, but it doesn't drive who the characters are.
It doesn't feel like, I hate to say that ever since I saw the movie, they came together. I to say like, so you're saying LA is a character in the story. it does have that feel to it, but I think that is kind of what we're looking for, is that Los Angeles is a more important part of it than just the backdrop for everything that happens. Like I kind of agree with Jonah. It could have been in any city and it could have been about something else. They chose something that was actual history, but it's still like, I don't know. It doesn't feel like I came into this thinking it's the clear winner because I think it's the maybe the best movie set in Los Angeles.
I think Pulp Fiction and Chinatown are probably objectively the best of the movies, like the best specimens of a movie set in LA, but not the best LA movie.
Right. It's like with like Chinatown, if they had moved it to another city, they could still call it Chinatown.
Yeah.
And also they could come up, they can find some other municipal conspiracy.
Yeah. There's always going to, you can always find a municipal MacGuffin for any of these. Yeah. Wow. All right. And also Roman Polanski's a monster. Goodbye, Chinatown.
See ya.
Uh-oh.
Here are final three, gents. Swingers, Ed Wood, and Friday. We have one that represents, we're all roughly the same age, one that represents pretty much us, straight white dudes at the turn of the millennium in Los Angeles, hustling to make a living.
Yeah, living in or around and hanging out Los Feliz area.
yeah, exactly. Like that, it is that specific.
Yeah.
Ed Wood, which is a representation of Hollywood. So we get that Hollywood angle, but we also get a nice tour of the city, a specific time in the city's history, and the personality of the type of person that moves to this town to pursue that Hollywood dream. And then we have Friday, which is a hilarious representation of just being in Los Angeles and having nothing to do with show business.
Yeah.
And just what actual life feels like here. Does Friday travel enough?
Here's the, that's what
like, is Friday a neighborhood movie or is it a city movie?
Friday is like, and that's the thing. LA is a huge suburb,
right? For sure.
But I think maybe the like, besides it just being funny, it had mass appeal because it was just people hanging out on a porch on a suburban street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it like it didn't have to be, you know, South LA for it to
right. Work.
Those guys could have been hanging out in the suburbs of any city, just being bored and, you know, getting high and like just hanging out and worried about, you know, neighborhood weirdos and bullies.
Is there something to the fact that it's the only film of these three that is about native Angelenos? Swingers is a very specific reference. Like I identify with it. I came here and played video games with friends, and that was like life and sort of trying to make it. And I know all of those spots, and that is very neighborhood.
What are you going
to
live on Yucca your whole life?
Exactly. Like it's very specific and super like, Swingers is probably the most, even though it's kind of a crazy comedy in a lot of ways, it's also a really honest look at what life is like, especially starting out. Like you have the friend who's been successful. You all have like sort of a shorthand of all you speak, but none of them, I don't think any of those characters are from Los Angeles at all. I think they're all transplants, aren't they?
And LA is very much a transplant city.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's people I know, everyone I know that like moved to LA knows more about like all the aspects of LA more than like people that grew up in like Redondo Beach or even grew up like in the Valley.
Right.
And when I like, cause like I know how to get around the Valley. I know how to get around South Bay. I know how to get to, you know, I know how to get to like Pasadena and Whittier and all these different, you know, I can get around West LA. And it's that idea, like, it's like, but I know friends that like born and raised here that would have no clue. When I tell, like, yeah, I was telling friends in that live on the West side, I go, I live in Highland Park. They're like, where's that? Is that like, is that like North Hollywood?
Well, if you're born in,
and that's where I am.
Yeah. If you're born and raised in El Segundo, then most of the years that you're there, you're not driving. So you're going wherever your parents go.
And that's you've already the first 16 years of life. Yeah.
All you really need is a school to go to, some restaurants to eat out at, and maybe a mall where you can hang out. And maybe you go to like Disneyland once in a while. Like there are a few attractions you might travel to, but I don't think that maybe nobody who is younger is like, can we go hang out in Culver City this weekend? I don't think anybody's doing that. But that idea of like, you don't explore unless you're suburban and you have to go into the city to do stuff. You're not really exploring. In LA, the suburbs are the city.
Yeah. I remember when I was watching Valley Girl for the first time, I remember kind of being like, but isn't that all Los Angeles? Like I didn't going over, you know, there was this weird, like I didn't understand that aspect of it.
Yeah.
So, oh man.
Let me throw out a thought. It seems like we have two movies on this list that are representative of a small location within the city. And there's one movie on this list that I feel like I'm leaning toward for a few reasons, because it has the Hollywood angle. It has representation of many different parts of LA, of the suburban sprawl of LA. It's got a character who has that Hollywood drive and spirit. It's the reason that people move to Los Angeles, but it's a movie that was made by an absolute native son of this town, who puts his distinctly, not even distinctly LA, his distinctly Burbank, like neighborhood specific stamp on every movie he makes. And this one being, I think, his best example of that. And it, in its own way, is not only a love letter to the idea of Hollywood, but it's a love letter to the Los Angeles that he knows. I mean, Burbank is all tract houses or was all tract houses. And that's where Tim Burton grew up.
Yeah. You know, every time I go to Burbank, I'm just like, I feel like I'm in America, like the America I grew up watching in movies.
Yeah. It feels like, Burbank looks like the town from Edward Scissorhands.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where I'm leaning. What do you guys think?
you know, it's my favorite movie. I was kind of leaning towards Swingers, but when you broke it down, and I think the linchpin for me was when you said like it was Ed Wood made by an Angelino,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, kid that just was born and raised here and then, you know, went to college 20 miles away and then came back.
Yeah.
Went to Cal Arts or whatever. What was that? 30.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah.
Just, you know, ride and die, ride or die. Actually, no, I think he lives in London now, but.
Sure. But that's when he started wearing scarves and grew his hair out. Back in the day, he was in Glendale at Imagineering. Like,
yeah,
he is a local.
I love it. Like, there's that documentary, Waking Sleeping Beauty, about the resurgence of Disney animation.
That's right. It wasn't Imagineering. It was animation, because that's where mm-hmm. I saw it was in Waking Sleeping Beauty. So good.
Yeah, it's great. And there's another companion doc to that where it's like the two guys, the doc about the two guys that
yes. Ollie and what's his name? Frank and Ollie.
Yeah.
Frank, yeah. Who, in a coincidental thing, BJ Novak played one of them in the Mary Poppins movie.
Really?
That with where Walt Disney was played by Tom Hanks.
Oh, you're talking about The Boys, the documentary of The Boy, the one about the Sherman Brothers.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. What was the other one? Anyway, there's a lot of
Frank and Ollie were two animators. Mm-hmm. The Boys is – that's right. It was BJ Novak and Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah.
Casting, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were fantastic.
And they were great.
Yeah, but I don't know where I was going with that. Oh, yeah. You know, the thing we were talking about, like Tim Burton, where it's like he's like there's some guy going around the drafting tables, the design tables
mm-hmm.
of Disney animation, and you just see this goth kid like hunched over all pale, and you're like oh
Jonah, can I tell you that is the image of Tim Burton that popped into my head that made me go, oh my god, he is an Angelino through and through.
Yeah,
I think it's Ed Wood, and I think it's based on that exact image that popped in.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I started this thinking it was going to be Friday because it was different from the others in that it's about a native Angelino experience. Then I thought Swingers, because I thought it really does capture the feeling of everybody who comes to LA. Even if you didn't get here in the late 90s or early 2000s, there is a sense that is very – like he captures what it is to be a transplant in the city starting out and trying to navigate not only – starting a career from scratch and not knowing, like, do I do stand up? Do I do, mm-hmm. you know, how do I get an agent to go just navigating life?
And because you think it's because it's something you can do.
Right.
Which credit it because it goes to Vegas.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Eliminate it because you go to Vegas. Right. But I think, Mark, you made a really good argument for Ed Wood for its, the amount of LA it shows, that it's made by somebody from LA, and that it also captures kind of the pioneering spirit of people who are outside of the studio system, either mm-hmm. trying to get in or just trying to create stuff and have their voices heard. So I think it's a good choice. Plus it's a really, really good movie.
Yes.
All right. Hal, bring us home.
People of the world. This did not go the way I thought it was going to go. Mark and I were texting about this yesterday, and I said, what would I say? Chinatown. And what was the other one I thought?
I don't remember.
Whatever it was, it's not here now. It got eliminated, fell by the wayside. I'm proud of all three of us that we got through this entire podcast without mentioning Heat until this very moment, because
it was on my list.
It was on the long list.
Yeah, that's true. They figured out a way to make a shootout boring, and you will not convince me otherwise. It should not take that long. It doesn't take that long. I don't want that in a movie. I also want to give a shout out to The Karate Kid, which takes place nowhere in Los Angeles. It is all Deep Valley martial arts. But
Sklar Brothers a bit about that.
That it's not LA at all.
Tournament? Yeah, who isn't? And then I was like, yeah, who isn't going to this regional young child karate tournament in the valley?
It the All Valley Tournament, right?
Yeah.
All Valley
Tournament. It's like, you should try and get home early from work. Why? Oh, that's right. The All Valley Karate.
My God.
My favorite Sklar Brothers bits.
Oh, so good. But the best LA movie is none of those things we just said. It is Ed Wood, a masterpiece from native son Tim Burton, who now lives in London, but we're not going to hold it against him. And go check, if you haven't seen it, check it out. For goodness sakes, what are you
it's
doing
pretty wonderful.
That you haven't watched it? It is the best LA movie, asked and answered. I hope that Tommy Bobo is happy with that.
Hey, all right, Tommy, you okay with this, Tommy?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, Tommy says he's okay with it. Jonah Ray, thank you for coming and helping us out with this. This was a lot of fun. Where can people find you? What do you want them to know?
I don't want them to know where they get me.
Fair enough.
Put yourself on the grid.
Track these now.
Yeah.
I'm at Jonah Ray on Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, that's Mr. Science Theater, 2 seasons on Netflix right now. I was in a movie with Felicia Day and Malcolm Barrett on Hulu. It's a horror comedy, a very goofy, funny horror comedy directed by Alejandro Bruges, who was the director of Juan of the Dead, the Cuban comedy zombie movie. I'm on that. It's on Hulu. It's free. It's still out there. So go check that out. It's a lot of fun.
Very cool. Well, awesome. Thanks for coming. And this was a lot of fun. This topic is closed, but there are many more to discuss. So please reach out to us on Twitter at We Got This Tweets. Check out the Maximum Fun subreddit or
email us at WeGotThisPodcast@gmail.com or go to the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/ We Got This Podcast. Talk about your favorite LA movies, share clips, do whatever you want. That's where you're safe. That's where you can talk about this. It's the only place where you're safe to talk about this. It's very important that you go there. Thank you to producer Ken Plume, researcher Kate McManus, graphic designer Uri Kelman, and QA engineer Jen Alba.
And thanks, of course, to our musicians, Jonathan Dinerstein and Mike Furman, for our score and theme song, respectively. And thanks to you, the people of the world, for giving us a chance to talk about the city that we love so much with our dear friend Jonah Ray. And now I just want to go explore all of Los Angeles, but I'm going to put a mask on first. For Hal Lublin, I'm Mark Gagliardi.
For Mark Gagliardi, I'm Hal Lublin. And don't worry, everybody.
We got this.
We got this.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.